I'm Janet Brandt. I'm the registrar here at Holden Village. I've been that here in that capacity for about 15 months now. I'm one of the lucky people that gets to live here. This is my home. People don't many times don't believe that when I say that, but this is where I live. Previous to coming to Holden, I lived in Minnesota for 5 years as the assistant dean of students at St. Olaf College for a while, and then also doing my graduate work at the University of Minnesota in educational psychology. Therefore, my interest in topics such as the one that I'm going to talk about tonight, which I am calling Changing Times, Managing Personal Change. My love is really in the areas of psychology and counseling, although I keep finding myself in administrative kinds of jobs where I put people in beds. But that's okay. I find that I get to do lots of neat things. I want to start tonight with something that has caught my eye several times here at Holden Village. Maybe you know it, or maybe you don't. Maybe you haven't been here long enough to realize that we make use of the service of Compline, which is in the Lutheran Book of Worship. We use it at least a couple of times a week for an end-of-the-day worship service together. And I'm always struck by this prayer that's included in it. It sticks in my ear. Be present, merciful God, and protect us through the hours of this night, so that we who are wearied by the changes and chances of life may find our rest in you through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. I don't know why that sticks in my ears. Maybe it's the alliteration of the changes and chances of life. Maybe it's just the flow of those words, but it does. And I get real excited when I start to think about so that we who are wearied, we are weary people. We are tired. We are many times, we don't know where we're going to get the energy to go on. And we're wearied by the changes and the chances of life, the changes that happen in our lives. Change happens to all of us. And many times it's just because of chance. By the changes and chances of life may find our rest in you through Jesus Christ our Lord. That, to me, just is, wow, everything as far as my faith is concerned. And to that we are people, we are human people who have changes in our lives, but as Christians we turn to our faith in that Jesus Christ came to us as the love of God. So I just offer that prayer, even though it's meant for the end of the day, I offer it for the beginning of our time here this evening. I'm going to say it one more time. Be present, merciful God, and protect us through the hours of this night, so that we who are wearied by the changes and chances of life may find our rest in you through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. Tonight, I'm going to talk a little bit about what is change. It seems like a kind of an elementary thing, but I want to talk about it a little bit and then help you folks come up to some of your own personal definitions that you can either share or not share. I'm not going to demand that everybody tell me what change is in their lives. And then to go on and to talk about some effective approaches to change in life, some things that I have read, have tried. Maybe you have some things that you have tried that you would be willing to share with the group. I have some steps. Everybody's always looking for good answers, right? So I have some steps to follow if you'd like, and some traits that maybe we could cultivate in ourselves. And then finally, I'd like to have some time where we could have questions and comments at the end. But first off, I did say bring a pencil. I hope there are enough around that people can have one. You forgot. We'll find some for you. Take one of these pieces of paper, and if you know where they're, yeah, you might have some in there. That would be great. Just quickly. I think there should be enough there.
Thank you. death of spouses.
You do. Oh, I do. You do. Maybe. Within the last year, though. Within the last year. Did everybody get one of those? Are there people upstairs that would like a copy of that? Okay. Great. Are there more of them? Okay. We may have to share. How are we doing with those? Are there any extra copies around?
We got one.
You need one over here? Can you? Are there any extras around? No,
a paper.
Do you need one upstairs yet?
In the past.
Do you need one up there? Okay, this is real simple, and I don't want you to ponder over it too long. If within the last 12 months, or you anticipate in the near future, one of these events happened or is going to happen in your life, put the number or the scale of impact on that line next to it. If it has not happened to you, don't put anything there. Just go down it quickly and check the ones that have happened to you within the last year. Are there more copies around? Can you maybe grab one with somebody and share? I've got some scratch paper here. Here's some scratch paper if you want. And if you didn't get one and you'd like a copy, I can make more afterwards. Just quickly go down it. I don't want it to take too long. Okay. There are many of these scales out right now. Some of them have different scoring possibilities. But the idea here is to let you know that there are lots of different kinds of change in life and that they all affect us and how we act and react. Also, the values given to the scales are really subjective. They could be different for different people. That's one of the things I don't like about this, is that it feels like some things have less value as far as change is concerned than others, and we're all different. There's a comment right here about Christmas with a question mark at the end of it. Does anybody have any comments about that?
Well, for me, Christmas seems to be a very busy time because starting about now, I like to do very creative handwork kinds of things. So starting now, I start thinking about what I'm going to do, gathering my materials, starting to set aside a certain amount of time every week to do this. And as you get closer to Christmas, then you're getting into shopping and parties and pageants at church and all this. It's very, very busy time of year.
Yeah, back there.
I'm a police officer, and from my personal experience, working the holiday season is probably one of the most unhappy times of the year.
Yeah.
We see a great number of family problems that crop up around the Christmas holidays. It just seems that is a real stressful period of time for a lot of people. Mm-hmm.
I think Christmas is hard. I never realized until I went through a divorce and started thinking back over times that we had together. And Christmas is always neat times, and you start remembering them, and they've been removed from you, and you can't have them anymore. And you know, it's always a downtime. When Thanksgiving comes, I just know the next 2 months are going to be tough.
Yeah.
You know, and it used to be they were up ones, and now they're leveling up. Mm-hmm. But for a couple years there, for a while, it's so strange.
Mm-hmm. So there's a variety of kinds of changes related to Christmas, a change in your schedule, what you have to fit into your day or your week, and a change from when you were a child to adult, or from marriage to not marriage, or children and not children, or not children and children, or whatever we have. That is basically the point I would want you to get from just this little quick little thing here, is that change is a variety of things. It's an alteration, a substitution, a variation. Something's different in our lives, and anything that's change doesn't always have to be a major big thing, or something that's negative. It lives. A change affects how we are acting and reacting to other people and to our own lives.
Yeah. I'd be interested to know, if it's not inappropriate, what the range was amongst people in the room here, like under 100, 100, 200.
Sure. That's one thing. When I ever take this, I always think, oh, wow, you've got it so easy. You know, you don't have very many problems. What would be a score?
How many people under from 0 to 100, let's say?
Well, let's try a high and see if we can look.
200? How many people 100 to 200?
Anybody higher than 200?
Over 200 to 300?
Whoa.
Over 300? 300. Over 400.
Whoa, you've got a lot of changes. Seems like an average in there would be around 200. Look by the hands. That gives you, the total here is 1,466, if that's helpful. So, 1,466, if I added it up correctly. I use an adding machine to do that. Sure, that could be a change. Right. There are lots of other things that could be in there. Change is a matter of life. In fact, it is a very crucial part, critical part in nature. A flower blossoms and the bud is gone. A seed sprouts and the seed's no longer. Day begins, night's over. So it's just all a part of creation. Change is meant to be. We're supposed to have it. So we might as well relish in it and enjoy it and go after it and make the most of it. At least that's the way I try to look at it. Sometimes I don't know if I face it that way. But generally we think of change in negative terms. Death, divorce, separation, ending of an engagement, an accident, big things like that. But it can be the gamut of things, from the real obvious like death or divorce to some not so obvious things like changing your job, moving, changing the decor of your home, moving the furniture around, painting the kitchen, getting a new haircut, children going off to school. I know I worked in colleges for a number of years, and I know one of the big changes for college students was after fall break, going home at freshman year, Mom had made your bedroom into a sewing room. They came back. It's just, Mom loved it because finally Mom can spread out. But the freshman comes home and it's like, my gosh, my whole home's different. My dog doesn't even recognize me or something. I know that I realized that I had moved out of my parents' home, which is a 5-bedroom farmhouse, and it's my mom and dad in it, you know. You'd think they'd have enough room. When my mom put the linens in my dresser, I knew I was gone then. I knew I was on my own. And robbery is another kind of change. You mentioned a personal crime that we can face. I have had a couple of big changes in the last few years in my life. One was a move to Holden Village. I moved from the Midwest, my family all being nearby, to a remote little mountain town that had 360 inches of snow in the winter. And that was kind of a scary move for me. And then a few years ago, I did have an engagement end, and that was a big change in my life. From a lot of plans being made and happiness, and all of a sudden they were gone. Some changes are age-related. Our ideals change. We get a little more pragmatic as we get older, perhaps. We leave home, go to college, go to a first job, get married. Loss of our youth. That's a big change in many people's lives. I have a friend who's about 34. He, I don't know if that's when you lose your youth. I hope not. I hope not. He thinks he has. All of a sudden, it's not very easy for him to lose weight anymore. Before, he used to be able to just start running and he'd lose weight and it was no problem. All of a sudden, he's got the extra weight. He's got a problem with his knee. He can't run because it hurts him.
Who's this guy?
We haven't met, right? No. That's a big change in his life. Giving birth is a change. The whole process. for a woman to have her body change and then all of a sudden drastically change again, and then trying to get your body back in the shape it was before. And losing your sight or losing your hearing, those are related to age. Some kinds of changes happen are in limbo, things that are limbo changes, what I call them. Perhaps you've been going to the doctor and you've been having tests, and you don't know if the decision or the result of the test will make a change in your life. And maybe it won't make a major change, but it could. Temporary changes, maybe a spouse or a significant friend has gone away for the weekend, and that change in your life has changed your behavior for the weekend or changed some things for you. Maybe you'll do some things you wouldn't normally do. Or even a haircut. Boy, I remember when I was a kid, I'd come home crying every time I got a haircut because I hated it. And to this day, I'm fussy about who cuts my hair. I need one right now. But even those temporary kinds of things, my hair, that was the only hope. My hair always grew back. I think that we are given life each day to practice in. We live life each day, but we need to use the little things that happen in our lives to practice for someday when maybe some bigger, more heavy-duty things are going to happen. I see that every day here at Holden Village in the summertime when we see that bus go down the road and there's a loss there. Maybe it's a loss of a roommate we've had for a couple of months, or a friend we met last week and had a good conversation with in the sauna, or a teaching staff person that we particularly liked. It's a chance to practice grieving because we, every day, grieve the loss of someone that's going down the road. And I look at that as in that way. So I like to see how, I like to look at my life in ways and how do I act and react. Now I have another little thing for you, a pencil paper thing for you to do. Flip that paper over and make two, maybe you want a book there to write. You don't even have a pencil here.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Make two columns and head them. One column write a major change that has happened to you and the other a minor change that has happened to you. Anytime, yeah. Something that you'd like to do some thinking around tonight. Two columns, a major change or minor change.
And just any time or not?
Any time in your life.
And just one in each column.
Yeah, one in each column. Could be a haircut for a minor change, or maybe that's a minor change, major change. Now, underneath each one of those, just quickly write down three or four feeling words of how you felt in reaction to that change. Just quickly, the first reactions you get right now. How did you feel when that change happened to you? I'm going to say some words now, and if that word fits for either one of those, just jot it down quickly. If it doesn't, just forget about it. In relationship to that change, does this word or do these words fit? Shock, fear, denial, affirmation, anger, sick, panic, guilt, hope, depression, loneliness, excitement. Now in a couple of words, a couple of phrases, write down what was your pattern for handling that change? Just a couple of phrases, just for you. What was your pattern for handling that change?
What do you mean pattern?
How did you react to it? What did you do? How did you go on? And now a couple of more phrases under those columns for this question. What did others do to help you gain strength in that change? Just a couple of phrases. What did others do to help you gain strength in those changes, or in that change? Any quick reactions here to that, or things you saw in both columns, or
did you expect us to put a negative type major change?
Any change that you wanted to.
Okay.
Anybody have any reactions there?
Well, I put my marriage is the most major change that occurred. It was a long time ago when it occurred. But it was something I anticipated, and with a lot of eagerness and excitement and happiness, and I felt extremely affirmed in that. And most of the people that I remember in conjunction with that whole time were extremely affirmative and happy for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was it was I guess I enjoy anticipating totally new experiences.
Okay. Thanks. Well, I'm going to go on here and say that any change is not easy, no matter if it's a happy one, anticipated, one filled with hope and excitement or not. I think that change is always difficult, and it makes us react in a way that it's helpful for me to look at how I react in any kind of change. Today, our changes are complicated because we live in such a technological and so many changes around us technologically and socially. I think of my nieces and nephews. I have several nieces and nephews who are going into college these days. We kind of grew up together. I'm about 10 years older than most of them. And I always felt like I grew up with them, and now all of a sudden they're going into college. I feel like I've always been in college because I always worked in colleges and I've been around young people. But I'm realizing these days that Pam and Grant are not going through the same things I went through when I went to college. And that's a real change for me, but I'm realizing just in 10 years the differences there are socially and technologically for us all. And that complicates our life, and it complicates how we look at changes. Our affluence also complicates that. When people were all very poor, it was easy to make decisions because you just said, no, we don't have the money for it. Now, some of us have, I talk about having enough, too much money to do anything with, but not enough to do anything with it. I can't buy a house with it, but I can't buy a bunch of books with it either. So it's kind of that in-between place. These days, it seems like we're held responsible for the decisions we make and the changes that we make in our lives. And sometimes that can go overboard, too. I think we need a we need to come back and have a balance of the environmental things that happen around us and the personal responsibility we take in the changes that happen in our lives. I think that relates back to, in the prayer, the changes and chances of our lives. It is critical, though, to approach the turning points in our lives with some skills. It can be frightening and discouraging and filled with despair if we don't have some skills. But a time of change can also lead to some self-understanding, some renewal, and some creativity for ourselves. It takes energy and it takes skills. And so the studies these days show that every 7 to 10 years adults have some change, have some transition in their life. We probably all are real familiar with the stages of children, but the research is just beginning with for adult stages, and that's beginning to get to be a lot of it available these days. Good endings mean good beginnings, and that's, as in nature, a day begins and a night ends. A couple of weeks ago, or about a month ago now, a woman left the village who had worked with me all summer. Some of you know her here, and that departure was very difficult for me. She and I had become very close friends, and I hadn't really realized it until the day she was headed down the road, and I was crying, and I was dealing with that change that was there then. But we had done a good job at the change. I think we had a good ending and good new beginnings. We parted saying, I feel like I've said my goodbye to you, and it's been a good goodbye. And we did some last hikes together and those kinds of things. So I think that's important for us to look at. I have a proposal of one little model. It's not the end all at all. It's just a model that I think is kind of nifty, that has 6 steps to it as far as managing change. And I've written those up here. I don't know how many of you can read that. But it's a model that I would like to talk about a little bit right now. The first stage is acceptance of a change that's happening in your life, and accepting the fact that it's not easy, it's going to take the energy, it's going to take the skills, there's going to be a little shock value in it probably, that there might be some grief with it. Any change that you have, there might be some grief there, that you're leaving some old things behind and you're starting anew. That's scary. There may be some depression, some restlessness, some indecisiveness, self-criticism. I know that when my engagement ended, I was very self-critical, and I've talked to a number of people along the way who have been divorced or had relationships end, and they felt like they were at fault, that they were very, you know, they were, what was wrong with them, is the question. I think that's a big part of change, some self-criticism in there. But out of the chaos comes the creativity, the newness, and for changes that, any change, I think it's an opportunity for a spiritual kind of growth in there, to experience the change, to dig right into it, to kind of lean into it and just know what's going to happen and really realize that you're going to survive it. I guess I'm a survivor, and I don't know. I hear people say that frequently. I think everybody pretty much is a survivor. After you've accepted the fact that change is there, that it's maybe not going to be so easy, then going on, plowing forth, and doing your homework. Define what's happening. If you're into a new marriage, define the what's happening in your life, what's happened that all of a sudden every day there's somebody new living with me in the same house. Maybe you have not lived with someone for a while. And what is the new reality what's happening for you? Then the question is, given the present situation, what are the options of going forth in this change? What changes happen, and what are my options? In any good decision, it's good decision-making process, it's helpful to get some help. Visit a friend, make a phone call, If you need to or want to, call a social service agency, a counselor, a pastor. Just find a good listening ear. Find someone that can help you get started on analyzing your assets and your liabilities, what's available for you, what's in it, who you are. What do you want? And that's hard. Finding out what you want, being pragmatic about it, and then considering your value structure. And when you can, that takes a lot of time, determining what it is you want. When I was deciding that I was going to quit my job at St. Olaf College in Minnesota and do something new, I took many months talking to friends, taking some tests at career counselors and doing some research here and there to really decide what it is that I wanted and to really pinpoint the kinds of things that were important to me and at the same time being pragmatic about it. Doing something that I could realistically do, but that was it within my value structure. And then brainstorm some options. One of the things I did in that change in my life was to go around, talk to a lot of people in a variety of areas that I thought I might have an interest in. I talked to people in business and people that worked in hospitals and people that ran retreat centers and people that did outdoor ministries and just a wide variety of things. Just brainstormed what would be possible. And I eliminated some things, definitely. I decided I wasn't interested in some things, but other things became valuable to me. Then came the period of incubation, and I call that the time when I just let it simmer. I did my homework, I'd done the legwork, I knew what options were possible, and just to let it simmer. While I was letting it simmer in that situation, I got 3 job offers. And that, you know, that was to me like, wow, you know, why is this happening? One happened to be here. And when I just took the time, and I wanted it to be the intuition that allowed me to figure out which one was right. And one day, I sat down, and I hadn't been particularly thinking about what it was I was going to do next that day, and I realized all of a sudden that I knew I was supposed to go to Holden. Of the 3 options, I had said to myself, they're all valuable, they're all positive, I won't have a bad experience at any one of them. But I realized, and this was a physical thing that happened, I realized that I was smiling when I thought about Holden. And I just decided, okay, that's it. And I still believe to this day it was the right decision, that there were, now as I look back on it, there were some things that I should have seen that were negatives in the others. But at the time, they were all pretty equal. Some words that are different things that different people use, psychologists, religious folk, whatever, discernment or focusing in, and those are the same kinds of things. Or I like the phrase prayerful listening. And it's not just a phrase, it's an action. And I think that's very important. I'm a real proponent of quiet in one's life and taking time. And I think we need that prayerful listening to help us in the changes that we have in our lives, to help us make decisions. That time when I started smiling was the insight, the light bulb. That's supposed to be a light bulb there. I'm not an artist. The light bulb effect. All right, aha. Sometimes it comes with, it just kind of happens like, oh, yep, that's the one. Or you might have the trumpets along with it. Or I've never had the trumpets in anything. Things just kind of like decisions happen, chances and changes and chances in my life. After that comes the time to verify the possibility of your insight, of your light bulb, of your illumination. Test it out, gathering more data For me, in this situation, I decided, well, maybe I better talk to some people who lived at Holden in the wintertime. What's it like? What's it like to live in a community of 70 people in the winter? And so to go out and gather a little more data to verify that this is what you want, or this is the part, this is the change that's important. And then finally, the risking, just getting out there and doing it, getting in the car, driving 2,000 miles, packing up everything, having a garage sale, whatever it is you have to do. But doing the risking part of it. So, those are the six steps in this little model: the acceptance, the homework, the letting it simmer, the incubation, the light bulb effect, and then verification before you take the risk. There are some traits. I have a friend in Seattle who's a wonderful, wise woman. I like to go and sit at her feet and listen to her talk once in a while. She just says neat things. And she has pointed out to me some traits that are important for people who are in change. And one of those is tolerance. Tolerance of ambiguity, especially. Being able to not know what the answer is for a while, but to be a little bit uncertain, to just be available to know quick answers, just to be able to tolerate some of the back and forth so that you can explore some options and things that are available. That's really hard, I think, today when most of us have been around television for so long. I was at home when Marcus Welby was a big TV thing, and there are always these crises on Marcus Welby that he solved in an hour. And I guess you get after so much of that, you get attuned to the fact that there must be quick answers. You must be able to solve these terrible problems in an hour at least. Another trait is optimism. Perhaps relating that to the theme here at Holden this summer, the politics of hope, although I don't think hope and optimism are the same thing. But to have hope in who we are and what's going to happen, and to really trust that there is a solution and that there is a good solution to the changes in our lives, or to the that what's going to happen as a result of the changes that happen to us will be good. And then finally, well, a couple of other things. Enjoying the process, just to not dread the fact that you're going to have to analyze, you're going to have some energy, you're going to have to do some observations, you're going to have to try to be as creative as you can. Just enjoy that. Smell the flowers. I think that's a great phrase around here, because I always think of being up at Heart Lake or Lyman Lake or Cloudy Pass, and there's these little mountain flowers that... How can anybody just not stand there and look at them for a while and enjoy them? Or to walk outside at night, like last night, and see that moon up over the mountains and not just feel obligated to sit and look at it. To enjoy those things that come into our lives and enjoy the fact that we're going through a change. And then finally, I think in everything that we do, we need to have a good sense of humor to get through every change that happens in our lives, everything. I think it's great that every once in a while we have a session like we did last night at Holden, and people sit around and tell silly stories and laugh with one another. And Holden is a place where for years the holy hilarity has been important, and that we have a time where we use our sense of humor and laugh together and share in life together. So those are just a few things that I have in this model right now, some steps and some traits, and I'd be interested in hearing if reactions to that or some things you people have done when you've had changes in your life. So.
Well, for me, almost every change is a major change. I didn't come up with anything on the minor side. I couldn't think of anything that was minor. Everything's major. The car needing a tune-up is a major. But I noticed when I put down the words for what I did when I faced this major change that I took down, it was in essence what your steps were. I feel it. You must be handling it pretty well because I managed to get through all the changes.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much the same thing, just finally, you know, accepting it. It is going to happen, and you're not going to die from it. I mean, like moving from one city to the other, it's not going to kill you to do this. And then going out and making it a positive thing.
Yeah, it sounds like you've transferred some of the skills you've learned in those not so major things, like giving the car a lube. To making a move from one city to another or something. Yeah. That's what I'm a proponent of, is learning from the things, smaller things, so that we can transfer that.
So. Well, I made two changes I can compare. In 1972, my family moved to Seattle, and then right now I just moved here until the end of December. And the major change I wrote down for myself was moved to Seattle. And that I was angry and I was scared and I had to deal with that like 4 or 5 years. And I think one of the problems there was that I never accepted it.
Hmm.
That was something I had to do. And I think coming here I had the same kind of thing, like, well, this is what I want to do. And so even though it's hard and I'm scared and, you know, something I want to do, so maybe there's something to accept. Maybe it's just age.
You were 12 or something, I suppose, when you moved.
But still, I never accepted it. I felt like that was the right thing. That's the decision someone else made for me. And I think
Out of control of that. Not being able to accept that someone else took that much control of your life.
I just think what a neat feeling it is when you finally accept it. Like, I was spending in school last year, I was kind of struggling, and the whole time through I might have known that it wasn't the best route for me right then, but it didn't hit me until the end of the year. And then once I realized, hey, I'm going to take a year off and really look at some other options, I felt so much better. But then it was a matter of kind of convincing people around me, because so many people said, oh yeah, she's the one that attended right into school for this, and boy, people almost got worried, like, what's the matter? And they're like, no, it's you know, I've already, I think, you get develop a sense of humor about it. You feel so good that you found the change that you're just like, don't worry, I'm fine. You know, I was worse off last month.
Melissa, last Wednesday at staff meeting, was saying her goodbyes because she's leaving next week, and she said that she's going back to Minnesota to do her career search, and that was kind of a humorous thing for everybody here because it sounded like, oh, wow, you know, she's really decided, but actually she hasn't decided what she's doing. But it was great that your sense of humor is coming into it.
That reminded me of a minor problem that I had once. My family and I went on a hiking trip with a church group up to Mount Rainier, and just had a new windshield put in the car. On the way there, a big truck full of stones drove in front of us and just peppered the windshield, kept on going. Got to the parking lot there, and I was already a little upset. One of the fellows there that was in the church group, someone that I really particularly didn't like, because I thought it was smiles, says, hey, Gunnar, come over here, you know, this smarmy smile on his face, and looked in it, and there was just water dripping down.
Oh, no.
So I opened the hood, and looked like the water pump went out. I said, well, you got trouble, you know, big smile. So I grabbed the hood, and I said, slam the hood down. I said, let's go on our hike. You know, and everybody was shocked, because I didn't deal with the problem. Of course, there's nothing I could do, and that I couldn't wait. So we went on the hike, drove the car home, changed the water pump.
You accepted the problem and just went on with life, right?
I think that's the hardest thing, maybe, I look around here and I feel like the great-grandmother. I think the hardest thing is accepting that you can't do anything. Coming to the point of realizing you cannot do anything. And the things we can do something about, for me are not that difficult. It's the things I can't do anything about mm-hmm. that are really difficult.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And coming to the point of saying to myself, you can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And the older I get, the more I realize there's a lot more things I can't do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the fact that you accepted you couldn't do anything about it solved your problem.
Yeah.
And often that is the solution to the problem, is accepting that we can't do anything
mm-hmm.
and proceeding.
That's right.
And it sometimes takes us a long time to do it.
It's
not so easy to just
slam
down
the road
and go.
Yeah.
In my job, I alluded to earlier, I'm a police officer. I prefer to call myself a crisis manager. I probably deal with more crisis than psychologists and psychiatrists deal with, and I deal with them in the immediate situation, when the things are really hot. And that's one thing I see people that have problems or people that are not willing to accept the fact that there are going to have to be problems in their lives and that things are going to change
mm-hmm.
one way or the other. I guess it's the patience, too. You just get patient and you wait. Things are going to come in their own time. I don't want to call it fate or karma, but if you learn to accept that you do have to wait for some things, you know, the problems do smooth themselves out over time. People that don't have patience are the people that I run into all the time. They're mm-hmm. having problems.
Mm-hmm.
They let things get ahead of them, and they don't wait, and it gets to be a real problem.
Someone was telling me a story the other day about a friend of theirs who one of the people in the couple, married couple, had just found out she had cancer and didn't have very long to live. And the very same day, they got a phone call that their farm on one of the islands, on San Juan Islands, had just been burned by arson. But it didn't make any difference that the farmhouse had burned, because it was in perspective there. I think that kind of relates to what you're saying there. The changes that you just kind of, there's perspective on things that the changes take, no matter where they are and what time of your life they are. That situation was pretty, the time period was so close. But I often say to myself, well, in 5 years will I remember this day?
There's a Bible verse, somebody has changed the meaning of it, and it came to pass.
Mm-hmm.
It came and it'll pass, mm-hmm. but it was that isn't the real. But they used that it has come to pass.
That was one of the old southern jokes.
Mm-hmm. My mother always told me, "This day too will pass," and I used to hate it mm-hmm. when she said it. It's always true. I guess that's why I hated it. Grandma,
you hurt while it's in process.
Mm-hmm. Right. Knowing that you're changing and growing in it, but sometimes that's hard. When I was in that breakup of the engagement, I think the hardest thing for me to do was to accept the fact that I was going to grow in that. I just wanted to hurt. I didn't want to grow in it at all. And finally, you know, everybody kept saying that to me, and I knew that was true, but I didn't want to hear it. And finally, I did grow and I did get out of it. But I think of the six steps, this is really the hardest one to get over.
Acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Were you at Dr. Norstedt's here this afternoon? He was telling about accepting illness, disease. And I think an example of one of our executives in New York in the LTA office. His wife had cancer, last year had surgery. And in March, they called and asked if I could come out and be with her a month or so, because she was so depressed, she wasn't eating, and so on and so forth. Then a few days later, they called and said they had taken her to the hospital, but she would be home. And I went as far as to Minneapolis on my way out to New York, and then I got a call again. She was home from the hospital. And I talked to her. She said, we have changed plans. We're calling all the kids home. Their oldest son is a doctor in Africa. And their kids all came home. They were together, she said, for a family reunion. They were together 1 week, and she died.
But they had a good time that one week.